Avalara provides cloud-based sales tax solutions for businesses of all sizes. Avalara automatically integrates with more than 700 ERP and e-commerce systems, likely the systems you use today. Learn more at avalara.com/WSJ.
Here's your money briefing from Monday, December 28th. I'm J.R. Whalen for The Wall Street Journal. The pandemic rewrote the rules of the workplace in 2020. Virtual meetings replaced conference room sessions, and the commute was measured in steps, not miles. But as we enter 2021 and more companies plan how they'll reopen the office, both employers and their workers will adapt to a brave new world of workplace rules.
A lot of employees are going to push the envelope and say, pound the table, I demand to work from home. And they're going to have some companies and some leaders that stand up and say, here's why we're not going to do that.
That's Tom Gimbel, CEO of the LaSalle Network staffing firm. Coming up, he'll discuss how the staffing process has changed and how the pandemic has thrust managers into uncharted territory. That's after the break.
To be a powerfully productive business, you need powerfully happy people. Two leaders in workforce management and HR have joined forces to become UKG, Ultimate Kronos Group. UKG creates comprehensive HR solutions designed to make employees happier and build more meaningful connections within your workforce. They've even done that for themselves, being recognized as one of the top places to work. And UKG's 12,000 employees help thousands of businesses build better cultures every day. When you're ready to make your people happier, UKG is ready to work for you. UKG, our purpose is people.
The home office took on a whole new meaning in 2020 after the pandemic forced most workers to set up their desks in their kitchen or living room. But what can we expect in 2021? Let's bring in Tom Gimbel, CEO of the LaSalle Network Staffing Company, for his thoughts. Tom, thanks for being here.
Good to be with you, JR.
So let's talk about the workplace and how it's changed this year. Seems like working remotely has affected pretty much everything.
Yeah, it's interesting. I would say that work has changed, or the workplace has changed, because there isn't one anymore for a lot of companies in this virtual world. But I think it's a temporary fix, or a temporary situation. I don't think the long-term solution will be remote work.
So what's been required of companies and employers to adapt to this new world, you know, even though it might not be permanent?
Well, that's the really interesting thing that exists today. I mean, if you take something that we are all seeing and giving congratulations to, like the medical professional, right? So what makes a hospital run? Well, there's the doctors and the nurses, but then there's also the administrative staff that greet families and patients, and there's back office people, administrators and executives, and then there's billing departments and finance and marketing, and you have this competing set of criteria needed to do the job. And that is frontline workers in any industry, whether it's garbage men or water department or whatever, and delivery drivers for food. And then you have the people that don't need to be in the office. And you have this intersection. And I think that's the real challenge that most companies have had, are the people that have to be in the office and then those that don't, and trying to balance the necessity versus want, and trying to make sure that people understand and respect each other's situations.
Is there any precedent for all of this, or any kind of a blueprint we can look back on?
Moving forward, I think it'll really be what companies want their culture to be and what companies are going to feel strong enough to stand up for what they believe is right and not bow to the pressure of employee wants and demands. And that's really the biggest challenge that we're going to have moving forward, is a lot of employees are going to push the envelope and say, pound the table, I demand to work from home. And they're going to have some companies and some leaders that stand up and say, here's why we're not going to do that. And what really wanes during remote work is collaboration and onboarding of new employees. If you're a company that's going to stay the same size with the same people and the same tenure, remote work may be okay. But it's very hard to collaborate and innovate when you're not together.
Now let's talk about the staffing process, everything from how companies handle applications to the actual hiring. What changes did we see this year?
So that's been something that is really fascinating and I think terrific, is that companies have realized that the recruiting and interview process can be expedited using technology. We all knew it before. Oh, a million years ago, it was when I got into this business 25 years ago, it was phone interviews. And people didn't like those because if somebody's voice wasn't great over the phone, and this was during the ages of landline, right? If somebody's voice wasn't good, they weren't as articulate, they were rushed, you couldn't see their facial recognition, all those types of things. Now we've got a situation where people just wanted to, you know, not literally touch, but where you could actually see somebody. And now what we've seen is the Zoom meeting is a great initial step. And candidates know that they have to look in a professional way, even if it's from the waist up. And we've got these fake backgrounds in back of us that we can do. So if we live in a one-bedroom apartment, we can have a backdrop that's completely different, right? That didn't exist 2 years ago, 5 years ago, to have a simple thing like a fake background to make it look more professional. And then the aspect of it's just an initial round interview. So you can still bring people into the office. But now you can't say, well, Jane is traveling, so we got to push this back 3 weeks. Well, guess what? Jane can do it 24/7. She can do it now. And that's a huge advantage to the process.
You know, Tom, over the next several months, workers are probably going to be having their first performance review since the pandemic redefined the workplace. Are companies approaching reviews any differently these days?
It really depends on the company. I know, because I talk to heads of HR and CEOs and CFOs every day, and there are going to be companies that really make it a rubber stamp process this year because they don't want to go through it. They don't want to have a million of these reviews and the lengthiness that goes through it, and it's an easy way to pass go without collecting $200, so to speak, and say, you know what, business is what business is. We start from scratch next year. Here's a 3% raise if you can afford it. Or here's no raise because of what happened this year. And everybody's going to bite their tongue and go along with it for the most part. And so other companies are doing the exact same process as they normally would. They're just doing it over Zoom. And you know what? It works, JR. It works.
All right. Let's talk about requesting a raise. Some people might be reluctant to bring up the topic since the pandemic has put a financial strain on many companies. But has the pandemic changed the way people approach their boss about a raise, you know, without sounding ignorant to company finances?
Well, it's a very good question, JR, and I believe that this is really leads us to the topic of EQ or emotional intelligence, and it's the number one skill that most people are lacking, and that is to understand how your question will affect people rather than just being a question with an answer pending. And when we look at the answer of wanting more money in a time, really in any time, but in a time like this, is number one, is the company doing well? Are they in a good financial situation? Did the company, now you may not be privy to everything, but you usually are privy to one thing, and that is, did the company grow revenue? Doesn't mean they're not profitable if they didn't. It just means if they did, they should be, or how they're running it may be off kilter, and that's a topic for another day. If that's the case, then you have a little bit stronger room to stand on. If they didn't, but you feel that you excelled, you have to really understand why you excelled. And this is the emotional intelligence part, JR, is every employee needs to look at what their contributions were for the year. It's almost like putting a resume together. What were you tasked with? What did you accomplish? What were the results? If you can't eloquently list out those three things and show them how they added value to the company, you don't deserve a raise, more or less have the comfort level to ask for one.
And then there's the mental health of workers. The pandemic not only blurred the line separating work and life outside of work, it also left some people with a feeling of isolation. Is that something companies are becoming more sensitive to?
So I am on the side of life and work being meshed. So I never believed, you know, the 1960s, 1970s belief of keep your personal life personal and keep your work life at the office. I always thought that to really manage people the right way, you need to know what's going on in their life, because health and wellness and family and marriage and divorce and children and parents, that leads to how your brain is functioning to be able to contribute at work. And the best managers know that. Now, what's happened is being alone in a house or an apartment, working and living in the same space all day, every day, there are a lot of other issues, as we've seen through the news media and social media. And I think that the best companies I've seen have taken that into account and worked really hard. And I think the best thing a company can do, if they can afford it, is to make sure that their insurance is working and providing telemedicine and therapy and mental, you know, social work and psychiatrist stuff for their employees. It's crucial.
Now let's talk about managers. I imagine the kinds of sudden changes we've seen aren't exactly covered in management training programs. So how has the pandemic changed the skills that managers need?
So the challenge facing managers are that being able to lead a group of people pre-pandemic is completely different than this. It's almost like being great at your job and then are you a good manager or a bad manager? I'll give you an even better equivalent. It's being a great athlete during the regular season and then being a great athlete in the playoffs. And why is there a difference? Because there's more pressure. Every game's on national television. Lose and go home. And that's what we've been dealing with, is managing people when there is huge trauma emotionally outside of their job. Then with the economic problems of April, May, and June, of managing people when business may not have been as good. And then trying to communicate to your boss and manage up during this crazy time. And then throwing in the social and racial inequality issues we dealt with over the summer that still exist, they're just not in the forefront of the news media, is really a challenging role. And the question is, every manager should be asking is, what have I done outside of my job to get better? What books have I read? What webinars have I attended? What classes have I signed up for? Because while there is 3-7% of the population that can handle things innately, the rest of us really need outside resources to help us do our jobs better.
You know, the COVID-19 vaccine and the easing of work from home directives could make it easier for more companies to reopen their doors for employees in 2021. But that doesn't necessarily mean that they will, right?
That's the $64,000 question to date us both, JR, right? Is that, will companies require people to come back in the office? And if so, when? And I think the majority of companies are going to be very aggressive at bringing people back into the office once the vaccine is in common distribution, which I think it sounded like Dr. Fauci said that the vaccine will be in wide distribution to ordinary citizens in the April timeframe, which means that come the end of the second quarter, I believe companies are going to be aggressively bringing people back into the office.
And so how is that likely to change up the workplace ecosystem and how people interact?
I believe that the number of people that are in the workplace that are going to be uncomfortable returning, not because of the health scare, though that will be a small percentage, I think the idea of now working with a group of people again, and the noise and the time management and getting to work and really basic things for adults are going to have to be quasi-relearned. It's almost like having atrophy if you're laying in bed for 6 months and using your muscles again.
All right, that's Tom Gimbel, CEO of LaSalle Network. Tom, thanks for coming on the show.
Good to be with you. Thanks for having me, and happy holidays.
And that's your Money Briefing. I'm J.R. Whalen for The Wall Street Journal.